Hey, come here. Come on. Oh, good boy. Good boy. Hey, you want to lie down? Can you lie down? You remember how to draw? Yeah. Oh, God, yeah. You are one smart doggy there, you know. A lot of people think you're just one of those foo-foo dogs, you know, that yap all the time. I appreciate the fact that you never yap. And you are one smart animal.
Well, thank you, Rob.
You're well. Who's out there? Come on out.
It's rude to turn your back when someone's talking to you.
Yeah, well, it's rude to trespass, too. Is that you, Hartman? Quit kidding around. Where are you?
Rob, look at me.
Is that you, Ty?
You betcha.
No way. Dogs can't talk.
It's me, all right. I can talk.
Absolutely not. We're not having this conversation. Come over here. Hey, come here. Come here. You can't talk. I know you can't talk. We're not having a conversation. We're not doing this anymore. Come here. Come here. Prove it.
Okay, remember the time your wife Sylvia cooked that roast beef dinner for your anniversary?
Yeah, what about it?
You told her it was the best thing you'd ever eaten.
Yeah.
You only ate one bite and fed the rest to me. Oh. And what about that time you borrowed Hartman's weed eater without asking?
All right. I believe you. My dog can talk. I got a talking dog. I must be nuts having a conversation with a dog. Hey, maybe we can get you one David Letterman's Stupid Pet Tricks.
Hey. Who are you calling stupid?
You can't talk. You are my dog, my little Ty. I raised you from a puppy. You never talked before. Hey, where'd you learn how to talk?
All dogs know how to talk. We just choose not to.
Why?
Why should we? This way we get fed, have a place to sleep, get lots of love, take naps anytime, and never work a day of our lives.
Yeah, well, that is a pretty sweet deal.
Yeah, we like to think of man as dog's best friend.
Hey, why now? I mean, what is it about today that you got to show me you can talk?
Well, after all this time, I just feel like I should tell you how much I appreciate everything you do for me.
That's no big deal. I don't mind.
I know, but you do so much. Feed me, bathe me, walk me, even scoop up after me, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, well, that's one job I don't really like very much.
And yet you do it anyway.
Well, you can't do it yourself. Or can you?
No. I can talk, but I don't have thumbs.
Okay.
And that's what I mean. For all the things I can't do for myself, you're there. You do all those things whether you like them or not.
Hey, I love you. You know, it's kind of like my job to take care of you. I'm your master.
That's it. You don't care if I'm good or bad. You might get disappointed in me, but you're always there to care for me. I've never thanked you, and you still love me. Thank you.
Hey, I just want you to be happy.
Many times after you feed me, I run outside and growl at the mailman, sneak up on the cat, and in all the excitement, I just forget to come back and say, thanks.
Hey, you're welcome. Come here. Come here. Hey, you're welcome. Come here. There you go. Well, you know that stuff you said? I appreciate it. Come on, we better get going.
Whatever you say.
Hey, I am the only one who knows you can talk, right?
Yes.
What do you say you find out what Sylvia's getting me for my birthday present this year, huh? Come on, let's go.
Well, there we go. See the pet tricks here on the stage at Horizon. You just never know what you're going to get. Now we're going to look at the idea of appreciation. Philosopher Cicero, he argued that among the virtues, that gratitude was the parent of all the others. And if you can get gratitude right, everything else will begin to spring from that. In fact, contemporary social scientists have done advanced empirical tests of the theory. So that actually being people of gratitude, beginning to be more thankful, has actually testable, verifiable facts in relation to our life. It stimulates moral behavior, they've found. It encourages people to behave in a pro-social manner. Gratitude is positively related to such critical outcomes in life as satisfaction, vitality, happiness, optimism, and hope. So how can we be people of gratitude? In fact, I think here's the dilemma. It's one thing to feel gratitude, as we talked about earlier. It's quite another thing to be grateful. One thing to feel grateful, and another thing to be grateful. And therein lies the tension of what it is to learn the seventh habit that Jesus talked about. The habit of learning to return. Learning to take those feelings and that list that we could all come up with, and learning to take that list and to take those feelings and to put it in such a place that we learn to return to those who had an impact or that we've indebted to or have given us opportunities. Jesus told a story one time. Actually, it was a true story that Jesus related. In the book of Luke, Luke recounts it for us. And he says this, Luke 17, 11 and 19. Now it happened, as he, Jesus, went to Jerusalem, that he passed through the midst of Samaria and Galilee. Then, as he entered a certain village, he met 10 men there who were lepers. And they stood far off. And they lifted up their voices and said, Jesus, Master, have mercy on us. So he went, when he saw him, he said to them, go show yourselves to the priests. And so it was that they went. On their way, they were cleansed. And one of them, when he saw that he was healed, one of them returned. And with a loud voice, he glorified God. And he fell down on his face at his feet, giving him thanks. And he, by the way, was a Samaritan. So Jesus answered and said, were there not 10 that were cleansed? Where are the other 9? Were they not found who returned to give glory to God except this foreigner? And he said to him, arise, go your way, for your faith has made you well. A little background on leprosy. Leprosy was pretty prevalent in the times that Jesus was. And when you got leprosy, several things happened. You would actually be isolated or quarantined from your family. So you can imagine these 10 lepers who for years have been isolated from their families and their friends. You weren't allowed to get nearby. So when Jesus came, they had to cry from far off, have mercy on us. You weren't allowed to have social interaction with those who didn't have leprosy. In fact, often it was felt that it might have been a curse from God, because when you had leprosy, you had to go present yourself to the priest, and the priest would declare you unclean. And then you would have to leave your friends, leave your kids, leave your spouse. With no known cure, essentially, never to see them again. To watch your kids grow up from far off, to feel isolated, to feel like the priest is the one who gave the priests in those days were often acted as a physician, often acted as the lawyers, often acted in several different aspects. And so many lepers felt maybe they were cursed by God. They felt isolated from their friends and family. And so when Jesus shows up, they say, have mercy on us. And Jesus, the first thing he says is, well, what I want you to do is go show yourself to the priest. We've done that. That's how we got into this mess. The last thing we did is show ourselves to the priest. She said, no, I want you to trust me. Go show yourself to the priest. Because the priest was also in charge of when a person was cleansed. The priest would check you out and give you the kind of good bill of health to go back and be with your family. So these 10 lepers are on their way back to the priest to talk to him. And on the way, it says that they are healed. Well, imagine if you're one of them. Imagine it's your friends, it's your family you haven't seen, it's your neighbor. You haven't seen them in many years. Maybe you've been isolated or quarantined for 10 years. Maybe it's been 2 years, whatever. What's the first thing on your mind? Were these other 9 not grateful? You think if you'd gone up and interviewed one of them, they'd say, oh, yeah, Jesus, he owed me. No. You better believe it. Those 9 ran back and said, I want to hug mom and I want to hug dad and I want to grab my kids and I want to say, wow, I'm back. I'm back. They had lots of feelings of gratitude. I mean, they just got their life back. But only one of them learned to return. Only one of them actually went back. Andy Stanley, I listened to a message he gave on this topic back in November, and it was so convicting to me and so motivating to me to begin to incorporate this into my life that I borrowed a whole bunch of his material for today's message. It was just so good. I can't do any better than that. Andy Stanley says this. He says it isn't that they didn't feel gratitude. They just didn't return to express gratitude. Again, the other nine, you better believe they're probably jumping up and down. And imagine it's your spouse who's come back over several years. Imagine their reunion. Kids, come hug Dad. He's touchable now. Come, let's get together. Let's have a big party. Joy and energy and gratitude and thankfulness was just surrounding the other nine. But only one of them learned to return. Only one of them went back. Which brings us to this dilemma. Which brings us to this idea of how can we create environments in our businesses, in our families, in our marriages. Don't many of us feel often in our marriage, I feel like the other person takes me for granted often. Don't we feel like our kids often take us for granted? They're not very thankful. All they do is complain. How can we create environments and how can we begin to incorporate into our life this discipline of learning to return? Well, I think it begins as we understand this. Ingratitude, unexpressed gratitude, when you don't say it, when you don't return, when you don't go back, unexpressed gratitude communicates ingratitude. Let me say that again. Unexpressed gratitude, the nine who didn't go back, communicates ingratitude. And Jesus says, press pause, whoa, teaching moment here, guys. Isn't there something wrong with this picture? Where are the other nine? Why didn't the other nine come back? Jesus is saying this. What happens is, when you don't return, honey, if anything changes, I'll let you know. I told you I loved you 10 years ago. If it changes, I'll let you know. You know what? I told you I was thankful for dinner when we first got married. You don't want me to do it again, do you? And you may be able to have a list of saying, you know, I appreciate that my husband, my wife, that they work really hard. I appreciate everything they have for me. I can make a list. I have all those feelings. But if you don't learn to return, to express those in a regular, habitual way, it begins to communicate the very opposite. Unexpressed gratitude communicates ingratitude. And you know why? Because our spouses and our kids and our employees can't see our feelings. I know this is novel. This is like revolutionary. But see, isn't it true? What happens when you think, well, I feel this way. Well, of course they know it. No, they don't. They don't. And until we learn to return and take that list of unexpressed gratitude or those feelings of gratitude and express them, it's going to come across to the people we love, the people we care about, the people that we actually have all these great feelings about as ingratitude because they can't see our feelings. And telling stories is not returning. Again, if I asked you for a story of who you're grateful for, you could probably list it off. In the middle of that story, you might well up with emotion. Tell me about a coach who really got you on the right track. Or maybe it was a Cub Scout leader. Or maybe it was your first boss who gave you a big break. And you're just, oh, I remember that teacher who really pulled me under a wing. And you just even well up with emotion a little bit. It just really touches you. You just remember how much you're indebted to them. And you may even tell other people. You ever done this? Oh, I'll never forget when my teacher did this and I'm just so indebted to. And I'm telling other people the great story of how great I feel. But I've never returned and told them. You ever done that? You're with a couple other moms. And you're bragging on your kids. Oh, I'm just so proud of my kids and they're doing all this. And everybody's like, I'm so tired of hearing this story. And you're going on and on. Or you ever got with somebody who just has grandkids? Wow. They pull out the pictures and you're like, run and hide. Because you know it's going to go, it's going to go, it's going to go. And you're just telling everybody how grateful you are and just how proud you are. But have you gone and returned and told them? Telling other people's stories. Imagine this. I'm really having a tough time and I really need to borrow $20. So I come up to Jim and the congregation. Jim, could I borrow $20? I've really in a hard time. He goes, yeah, I'd love to give you $20. So I get $20 and oh, take the $20 and I go and I take care of whatever it is I needed and get my $20 back. Several months later, weeks later, I say, I got to repay Jim. I keep that in my pocket. And I come, I talk to him. Do you know Jim? Jim is just the greatest guy. He loaned me $20, and it was a time in my life where things were really going poorly, and I really needed it. And it was my car broke down. I didn't have access to my wallet. I locked my keys in the car. Whatever it was, I need $20 for a fare ride. And man, I'm just so thankful for Jim. And I'm telling all kinds of people how great. Oh, Jim! What a great guy Jim is. Meanwhile, what's Jim experiencing if I haven't gone back? That ungrateful Chad Hovind calls himself a pastor. A pastor. I loaned him $20, didn't even say thanks. Now he's not returned to money. Didn't even come and tell me he's thankful. I don't even know if I'm going to go to that church anymore. Why? Because unexpressed gratitude communicates ingratitude. And the whole time I'm feeling so grateful. Every time I reach in and see a $20 bill, oh, it reminds me. Oh, wow. Wow. My feelings of gratitude keep me from being a person of gratitude. Therefore, I am communicating the very opposite of what I intended. Our feelings of gratitude keep us from being people of gratitude. Don't we even use that terminology? I owe him or I owe her a debt of gratitude. I owe them a debt. I know there's disequilibrium in our relationship because I owe them. I need to say thanks. I need to go back. I need to return. Many of us have pockets full of change. We're kind of wandering around. Man, I'm just such a blessed life. I've got such a blessed life. But those pocketful of chains are debts of gratitude that I need to go and regularly practice the discipline of learning to return to my spouse and say, honey, thank you for everything you do. Thank you for the little things. And get in detail. Thanks for the little ways you make things special. Thanks for the holidays that you go the extra mile and I'd be just like, it's fine. But you make things special and nice. Thank you that you do the laundry. Or thank you that you made dinner tonight. I just appreciate the extra things you put into that. To turn to your spouse and say, honey, I just appreciate the way you work hard. I appreciate the way you wrestle around with the kids. I appreciate the way you're an involved dad. I appreciate. Thank you. You may have felt it the whole time, but there's one thing to feel it, quite another thing to express it. Now, why don't we do this? Why is it so hard for me? Why is it so hard for you? I think there's several reasons. I think the first one is we're intoxicated with progress. And there's something about us that likes progress and likes forward moving. There's nothing wrong with progress. But we're always looking forward. The next thing, the next weekend, the next horizon. What's the next? We're always looking forward. We don't even look back, let alone go back. So it's not that we intend to be ungrateful. It's not that we intend to express this thing. It's just that we're intoxicated with progress. We're always about forward motion, forward movement. That's what we're about. And when that happens, we forget to return. We forget to go back. You ever had these conversations? Maybe you're the primary income earner in your family. And every time you have a conversation, you're having a conversation like this. We got to reel in the spender. We got to get the budget. Whoa, too much. Whoa, too much. Whoa, get back in. Whoa. And you just say, okay, got him again. Every conversation is about reeling in the spenders. And the primary income person's thinking, what am I doing this for? Wouldn't it be nice if maybe you turned to your parents today and said, thanks. Not, I'm not getting this, which is what our conversation is about. Thank you for your hard work. Maybe if you had put a phone call into your parents and say, Mom, Dad, thanks for everything you did growing up. I just so appreciate the memories that you made. I so appreciate the honesty that you entrusted to me. Think about what that would do. Think about what it would do if your kids did it to you. And imagine what it would do if you took the feelings you've had. And isn't it as we get older, we more and more go, oh, my goodness. I called my mom one time and said, Mom, I now get it. She goes, what? I now understand why you were so angry on the phone dealing with insurance. I've had to do it now with the medical insurance. And I've had to go through the whole rigmarole and who says this and who says that and all this stuff. I now understand, and thank you for all those hours you spent on the phone getting all the details figured out. Thank you. Oh, well, thanks. Because now I'm in it. You ever had those moments? You go, oh, parenting's a lot harder than I thought. I've been too hard on Mom and Dad. I need to call and say thank you, and I was part of the problem. Or have you ever done this? Maybe you're the primary homemaker in your home, and you've made this big meal and you've kind of got the details. You got it all put together. And you want to make this really nice meal and you put it in all the time and hours go into the preparation. It's all set and your family comes in. Come on, guys. I'm finishing my video game. Come on. Get down here. It's time to eat. All right, Mom. Everybody sits down at the table. It's time to eat. Then they suck it all up. They're gone. And at that moment, how do you feel? Oh, my family. That's just wonderful. You feel like I am never gonna do this again. Why? Because unexpressed gratitude communicates ingratitude, which makes the people that we say we care about and love feel rejected, feel resentful, feel angry. Research, Donald Whitney did some research on a Grateful Journal. This idea that we don't go back. We don't even think about the past, let alone go back. He said, many people think God has not blessed them with much until they move away to a whole new address and they have to pack up all their stuff. In the same way, we tend to forget just how many times God has answered specific prayers, made timely provision, and done marvelous things in our lives. But having a place to collect all these memories prevents their being forgotten. Several weeks ago in the series, in fact, there's always free CDs available each week. We did a series on, part of the series was Start the Habit. Start the Habit of Your Own Personal Journal. Think about what God's done, what people have done. And in the midst of that, when you put a discipline in your life to think about what's happened in the past, it reminds you, wow, I need to thank that person. I need to go back. I need to let them know. Because in gratitude, you see, unexpressed gratitude expresses ingratitude. And the problem is that ingratitude is actually a form of rejection. The message of ingratitude is, I really deserve what you gave me, and I owe you nothing. The message of ingratitude is stronger than that. In fact, it wasn't good enough for me to say thanks. Keep working. Maybe it'll get to a point it gets up on the radar screen enough that I'll say thanks. But work harder. It actually communicates rejection. And none of us want that. None of us want to feel that way. But ingratitude has the same effect as rejection on people. And isn't it true that people redirect their loyalties? They redirect their loyalties to those who accept them. And when we're not expressing our gratitude and it's communicating ingratitude, which then communicates rejection, the people we love the most are going to redirect their loyalties to a place where they feel grateful and feel loyal. Whether it's an employee situation, hey, I give them a check. But there's something about the emotional component of expressing our gratitude that redirects people's loyalties. You can redirect your spouses. You can redirect your employees. You can even redirect your kids right out of the home simply by not saying the things you feel. Because it communicates to others ingratitude. It's not by what we feel, but it's by what we don't say. You know, one of the things we did as a staff this week, maybe something that you do, is celebrating stories. We got some thank you letters out, and we're going to try and do this every month. Often a given week, I'll sit down, I'll just write letters to folks who volunteered or helped out or people who stepped it up and in time or treasures or talent in the church or just somebody who I talked to in the service I was praying for. And we talked about just from a corporate strategy. Maybe you do this in your corporation or your organization. Is just build into the routine of your organization. Every 6 weeks, we're going to write thank you notes. Because it's not that we don't do it, it's just we don't have time. We're thinking about the next deal, the next deal, the next deal. We don't thank the people who we're appreciative of. So you know what? Once a month, we as a staff are going to sit down. And we're going to say the things that we know we feel. To build it into the routine. To celebrate the stories. To say, this is what it's really all about. Because what happens when you return? What happens when you make that phone call? What happens when somebody does it to you? Several things happen. Your relationship with God gets put back in place. Because suddenly you're like, God, I realize everything you've given to me and I'm expressing my relationship back to you. Your relationship with other people is out of whack because this is debt of gratitude. And when you go back and return and pay back, relationships get restored. And no longer is this a general feeling of, oh, we've taken each other for granted. It's, man, I want to do more. Because doesn't that happen in you? When your kids or your spouse comes up and says, thank you, I'm so proud of you. Doesn't that make you want to kind of take the next step? What's the opposite thing to motivate you? Being nagged to death? When your kids come up and say, I don't ever get anything. Do you think to yourself, I just really want to do more? No, you think, what a bunch of ungrateful kids. How'd they get under my roof? So if you want to know how to motivate your parents, if you want to know how to motivate your spouse, it's the opposite. Express gratitude and people want to step it up. Wow, I want more of that. Because we redirect our loyalties to affirmation. We do. And it is in our hearts and it is in our control to learn to return, to be able to create those kind of environments for those around us. Andy Stanley says this, returners are people who take the time to return to those who took the time to make us successful. Returners are people who take the time to return to those who took the time to make us successful. That's it. At Christmas time, your kids open a gift, and you know that moment as parents we all feel? They open the gift, and you don't even care what the gift is. You're just thinking, say thanks. Say thanks. Something's happening. You can feel the inequality. It doesn't even matter what it is. Say thanks. I don't care if you feel it. And sometimes if you watch America's Funniest Home Videos, sometimes there's clips of kids who just, it's all over. Yes, I got what I wanted. I just be just blowing out of them. We want to be people like that, who don't just have feelings of gratitude, but we return and become people of gratitude because we express it. That's what Jesus says when he says, I want you to be returners. You see, happy people aren't grateful because they're happy. Happy people are happy because they're grateful. Isn't that true? We try to teach this to our kids. If you would just be grateful, you'd end up more happy. And they say, no. If I was happy, I'd be grateful. But it's the opposite. It's when we begin the discipline of gratitude in our life. And there is statistics done that show a direct proportion between our feelings and expression of gratitude and our spiritual growth. That those who have a steep incline in their spiritual vitality, their spiritual effectiveness, there is also a steep incline in their feelings and expression of gratitude. The two are combined. If you've ever been on a mission trip, you go and you see all these people who have so much less, and you say, but they seem so happy. And they seem so grateful for what they do have. I want more of that. I want to experience that. Over the last 6 months, I've got a chance to write lots of letters as I've been reflecting on this discipline. My speech teacher, a woman by the name of Mrs. Knobloch, she was 22, kind of her first big class. She taught speech communication. She taught drama. I was on the drama team with her. I did original comedy and a few other things. And she just poured time and energy and a kind of independent study I did with her. And 10 years later, I thought, you know what? I learned more about communication in high school than I ever did in seminary. I need to write her a letter. I wrote her this long letter just saying thanks, gave her a couple copies of my messages and said, I just appreciate it. I've just continued to refine what you've entrusted to me. I thought about my pastor. I was ornery as a kid. I mean, I was my youth pastor. What a saint. I mean, he'd invite me to go to a youth group event, and I'd go, and they had these rubber BB guns. And I would go get that and think, how can I shoot the youth pastor in the butt with this BB gun? I mean, that was my goal for the spiritual retreat. I mean, that's what I tried to do. And I thought, man, he put up with me. He did. Oh, you know what? I need to call and say thanks. Thank you. I had a Sunday school teacher who taught my Sunday school class. Get this, Mildred Belmore, across the street from me. She taught the 2 and 3 year olds for 26 years. I know this because when I went home to my home church, she taught Javen and said, Chad, I had you in this class. And she's never retired. And I wrote a note. There's so much change in our pockets. When our team this week went down to Mississippi, it was kind of our way as a church of saying we want to take everything God's entrusted to us and go and say thanks by helping those who've been in a really difficult situation. And the outpouring of gratitude that was experienced and felt by that team was unbelievable. In fact, when John and Joe and I were talking this week and then this morning, it was just amazing to see what God did to that trip. So I want to invite John and Joe to come up and talk a little bit about how they returned to give back and ultimately the return of Thanksgiving they got from the team. Can we welcome them to the stage?
Well, the problem's not in your TV set. These are actually different colors.
He called me and asked me to wear the shirt.
I don't know Thanks, about John. You all, but when we were watching the TV on Sunday night before the hurricane came in, just the devastation, to 30 days later be able to go down there, there's just a real sense of thankfulness that we even just got to go. And I know, Joe, you kind of twisted some arms to get people to go, didn't you?
Well, some, absolutely. But first thing I want to do is to recognize the people that were with us in Mississippi. If you guys could just stand up and thanks for you. Thanks for your families to support and allow. There's a lot that goes into the opportunity to go anywhere and help anyone for any reason, and and you know the families you know sacrificed a lot to allow husbands and wives to go down. There's a lot of people that bought our firewood. There's a lot of people that did a lot of things that weren't able to go down on that trip to Mississippi that really helped us out a lot, and I'm very appreciative. But, yeah, we twisted a few arms, but that's kind of what we do, isn't it?
Right. Yeah, but everybody who came back, they were like, you know, thank you so much that we got to go on this trip. You know, we go down to serve, but people were just so thankful that they got to go on the trip. And, you know, with women, we always tease them about how much stuff they take. But this was 15 men, two ladies who outworked us. But yeah. 17 people. And this was like tool time. I mean, we dragged a U-Haul, a Bobcat, about 8 chainsaws. And you never seen so much stuff. But that was kind of our way, their way of saying, hey, we want to serve these people. We want to give to these people out of a sense of, you know, God has given us so much. And in fact, Kevin, I don't know if Kevin's with us, but he sent me an email this week. He says, I just feel depressed because, you know, I get back here and we have so much stuff back here. And they're still living in that situation. We went into an area where there was 12-foot water over people's houses. And some of the people were about 2 miles from the coast, very rural. A lot of these people didn't have money before the hurricane came through. And some of them didn't have insurance. They were white. They were black. But it was just kind of overwhelming to see how grateful they were as we went. And even if we couldn't help them, they knew we'd help somebody on their street. They started waving to us as we would drive through the neighborhoods kind of scouring and looking for people that we could help. And one kid really sticks out of my mind. You talk about expressing gratitude. He was a ninth grader. And we'd met his family in the parking lot and figured out that they needed us to go help clear the road going back to their house because there had been a trailer had been picked up, a trailer where someone lived, and it was dumped in the middle of the road. And the Army had come through and with a big, heavy equipment had moved it out of the way, but not far enough. So our guys got to go back there with their Bobcat, you know, and have a great time, you know, taking that out. But this kid was, you know, a ninth grader, says, you know, thank you so much for helping my family. And, you know, my dad has a bad back, and he really shouldn't be moving these trees, but they had these huge trees. And he said, my neighbor's house ended up being in our house. And they're coming over kind of picking through their house, but they're in our yard. And just kind of weird that they're in our yard. But he said, thank you so much for helping our family. Some people called us angels. And some people said, well, you can't even help what we need. But all these churches, we felt like we were doing this great thing. But the reality is we were such a small part of what God was doing as a corporate witness through all these churches. And the people, really, they expressed gratitude, didn't they?
Yeah. I think that, and I've gone on a couple service trips, you know, and I go, to be honest, for very selfish reasons. I go because it makes me feel unbelievable. And it really resets, recalibrates my life and really allows me an opportunity to understand and appreciate what I do have and to be grateful for what I have. I mean, where we came from, these people had absolutely nothing. I mean, everything was taken from them. The clothes on the back, and that was it. And, you know, to have them express their gratitude to us when we had so much and they had nothing, was it blew us all away. And we spent 3 days just crying and working. I mean, you couldn't help but to cry. And yeah. Even the toughest of us were brought to their knees by the end of the trip. And so if any of you all, you know, have a heart for serving, I highly recommend that you know you talk to your families and you align yourselves to give yourselves an opportunity to go and experience, because it really will help you recalibrate what's important to you in life. You know, the BMWs aren't important, the big houses aren't important, fancy clothes aren't important. None of that stuff's important when you come back from something like what we came back from.
Right. And Joe and I both went to Belize last year. This was Joe's second year at Belize. And, you know, it's going to be, once you go, you're kind of addicted. You want to go back and you want to experience both giving, but in giving, their expression of thankfulness just makes you feel so wealthy, so, you know, blessed. I know Jim Pustinger is taking a trip October 20th. He'd love to have everyone. He'll just get a big bus, take you all. And Tim Mackey's thinking about maybe doing a trip after Christmas. But I want to thank you for supporting us, too, and going, because we couldn't go if it wasn't for Horizon and the logistics. It was just so neat to represent the body of Christ and be down there. So thank you.
Thank you.
Well, as we head out today, we gave you a thank you note. And before you leave, you don't have time to write the whole thing, but put that name down of someone you're going to write a thank you note to. Put that person on your mind. If you've got a pen, you can write that in. But somebody you're going to say thanks to. Begin the discipline of learning to return, of communicating that stuff that's always inside you. Now, on that note, I want to say thanks. I know many of you prayed about and thought about the Start the Habit talk we gave last week. Maybe you've approached and talked about that, made some decisions accordingly. Thank you. Thank you for those of you who serve regularly in the church, for those who help out with my kids when I'm in here, those who help out babysitting, those who help out teaching them, not just babysitting, but anchoring a value system in them, those who friends work with the teenagers. Thanks. Thanks to those who've upped your giving financially. Thank you for those who get involved, whether it's on stage or behind the scene. We couldn't do it here at Horizon if it wasn't for what you do. I just want to say thanks. If you've been coming for a little bit, you're interested to know more about how you can get involved, who we are as a church, what we believe, I just invite you next week over at the Parsonage, over in Clippinger. We're going to have a little dessert get-together for a couple hours. It's real informal. Beth and I will be there. It's my wife, Beth. We'd love to just get to know you, hang out. You're not committed to anything by coming except sitting and chatting for a couple hours. Ask any question you want. We try and be an open book. Who are we? What's going on with land? What's going on with the church? What's our future look like? What do we believe? What's our strategy? Any of those things are fair game. But mostly it's a chance there, Beth and I, just to hang out and eat some sugar together. So that's a good thing, too. Thanks again for being here. Let me close with some prayer. Dear God, we thank you that you're able to do above and beyond what we can think and imagine. Can we thank you that even a chainsaw in your hand becomes holy, becomes a way of expressing your love in a very tangible way. And God, we thank you that you use ordinary people, flawed people, to help out in dire circumstances. I just think of that house that got lifted up and slammed on those two cars, God, and how you're able to use our team to go and to help and to share your love and to share your tangible help of clearing trees and loving on people. And God, help us to remember to learn to return to you as well as to others. In Jesus' name, amen. Thanks for being here today.